For June the 24th, 2022, we talk about Super Auto Pets, SnowRunner, The Quarry, and much more. Welcome to Level 419. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meisweth.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. You've been busy.
It has been a crazy 2 weeks. So I'll jump right into that. No one asked, but I assume there's a layup in there somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Or an alley-oop. An alley-oop is the thing?
No, I was just going to let you go for it.
Sweet. Yeah, no. So since I was on last, I have gone to Origins. I have gone on vacation, and then we had Father's Day just this weekend.
Wow.
Which was a blast. So yeah, I've high octane. Well, I say that really Origins was the only high octane part about it. Vacation right. was very laid back. Father's Day was very laid back. But Origins was super duper cool. I was there taking Deck of Wonders, and kind of demoing it and getting interested, still in pre-order, so I didn't have product to sell, but was there with Foreteller, who does fully produced game audio, and I worked with them to do the story portions of Deck of Wonders, and they were very kind, hosted me at their booth. Mm-hmm. And it was just like 24/7 for, or I guess 24/4 for all 4 days of the con. So I was gonna say 24/7 for all 4 days of the con, but that doesn't really work,
right?
Just like, you know, talking with cool people about something I'm very excited about. And that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So yeah, I'll be doing it all again at Gen Con. So if anyone's going to be there, you can come hang out and check out Deck of Wonders. There is an outside chance that I will even have product then. So that's hugely exciting.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That would be really, really cool. But yeah, the con season is in full swing. Everyone masked up for it, which I thought was really cool.
That's good.
And yeah, like that kind of had a minimal impact on the vibe, I thought. And people were just generally very pleasant about it. David, as you pointed out in the past, plenty of people were just like, I'm in cosplay anyway, let's go.
Right, exactly.
That was very easy to include. So good times had by all. And then yeah, a super fun vacation, lakeside. Hanging out in a little downtown area that's right on Lake Erie, and I think we had 4 ice cream shops within 1 block of us. That is not an exaggeration.
What you're not there anymore, so you're not doxing yourself. What part of Lake Erie, like what town were you near?
Literally Lakeside. So Lakeside. Lakeside is a descriptor and a place. It's near the Marblehead Lighthouse.
Okay, that's right around where I. And basically in the past, whenever I've gone up to, gone up there. Oh yeah. You were like right by East Harbor. Yeah. No, that's that's literally there. You like, I camped for a long time at, we go to East Harbor State Park and around there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So yeah, it's nice. That's really cool. Did you guys go out to like Kelly's Island or anything like that?
We did literally nothing, and it was glorious.
That's great. Yeah.
we could see Kelly's Island every day across the lake from us, and it was just like, I mean, you know, like I said, 4 ice cream shops within a block. Like, I'll get to that fudge someday, but I gotta get through all this ice cream first. that was our primary activity. We also started playing a game called The Crew.
Okay.
Me, Jen, and her parents, who vacationed with us. It is, by the way, anyone with the bingo card, this is me shoving game stuff into the non-game section.
So
but
angry.
It's a board game.
I'm so angry.
It's a card game. It's basically co-op euchre.
I saw you tweet about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically Jen described it as co-op trick shot euchre, which is very apt. Like, you know, at the beginning of a round, everyone gets an assignment for a card they have to take. And whenever that card comes out, you better win that trick to get the card, or else everyone loses. But there's limits on how you can communicate. And there's limits on like the order certain cards need to be taken in and all that stuff. And every time you play, there's like a different mission set of limits to play with. Mm-hmm. And so it really is the trick shot of like, all right, you know, this round we have to win at least one trick with the lowest card. So, you know, how are we going to do that? Or, you know, we you know, have to take these cards in order 1, 2, 3, 4. How do we do that, et cetera. And so it's just really fun. And there's a lot of strategy in how you play it, but then also in how you draft, who takes what.
Okay.
Because, you know, whoever gets the highest trump card at the beginning of a round, is they call it the commander, but essentially the first player, they pick their objective first, then the person to their left picks, then the person, you know, and that you go around the table. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of daunting sometimes to figure out who's going to get what.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, really fun game. Yeah. And we played about halfway through, and I'm confident that we'll, you know, get together for more game nights and play the rest of the way through.
Yeah.
Cause we game fairly frequently already.
So I missed, is this fully co-op or is this, like competitive or sorry, I know.
Fully, fully co-op.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's for, you know, anywhere between I think it's 3 or 5 players can play it. So it's not directly analogous to Euchre, mm-hmm. But it's in that realm. Or I guess Hearts for anyone who's not from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Wait, what's Hearts?
Yeah. From the Midwest.
Yeah. I feel that's like a litmus test for whether or not you had Windows like 95 on ever.
Yes.
Oh, Heart, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, Hearts was there along with Free Cell and Solitaire.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you had Windows and you're playing anything other than the pinball, I really worry about you.
Minesweeper was fun.
Okay.
Why?
Yeah, pinball and Minesweeper. Anything else, you might be a serial murderer.
Wait, what about I'm sure there's...
Get out, Ben.
All right. I'll see you guys next week.
No, Solitaire's good. I think it that's just taken as read that you're going to play Solitaire. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it doesn't when you boot up the Xbox app, like the one thing that's pre-installed is the Solitaire collection.
I don't know. I didn't pay attention.
I think on PC that's what was installed for me anyway. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and Father's Day was fun. Again, low-key. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers and father figures out there. I said it in our Slack, but you do a good job just by showing up.
Yep.
Thanks for trying. And doing well, it should be added.
But, well, you know. You know,
just trying is good enough too.
Nice. Well, I'm happy you've been enjoying yourself while you've been away. Hopefully mm-hmm. not enjoying yourself because you've been away.
No. Well, you'll see all that activity has led to not much new on the games front. So
nice. Speaking of doing stuff low key, I've been watching Loki. Instead of starting up a new television show, you know, I felt like watching something new, but I decided, well, why don't I like, basically I've only seen 1/3 of the Marvel movies, which has hindered my ability to see a movie I'm interested in, which is the new Doctor Strange, because everything depends on everything else. So mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to just watch this. And at the very least, I'll get to rewatch some movies that I liked. Iron Man 1, The Avengers is pretty good, you know, stuff like that. And I'm watching Loki now, and I'm surprised at how much I'm enjoying it. So I've joined the rest of culture. But I've been doing it in chronological order by the timeline.
By MCU timeline, not the timeline that they were released?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Nor is it by the screwed up timeline that is in Loki.
Well, you know, it'd be impossible to factor in Loki into any kind of actual chronological read. So...
How comprehensive have you been in watching stuff? Is it like just the movies and a couple shows you like, or everything, or just absolute highlights?
Movies, like I'm not gonna, I haven't watched like the What If or like, mm-hmm. any of the stuff that feels like explicitly like it's not gonna relate to the main kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. All this was, I mean, I was kind of inspired by watching the by wanting to see the new Doctor Strange. Multiverse Sam Raimi movie kind of deal, but also
have you seen it yet?
No, I've not gotten up to it.
I'll say that you probably don't need to see that much before it, and you would probably wouldn't miss that much.
I had never seen the original Doctor Strange until like last week.
Yeah. That one might be a
good one. That's a good one to start with.
Yeah. But no, I had watched Moon Knight because my two favorite directors.
That is great.
Oh, Moon Knight's amazing. But yeah, I watched that because to my two favorite directors, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, they directed two of the episodes, which was enough to get me in. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. If other stuff is even like kind of this good, it might be worth my time. So it's good. You know, I don't need to apologize for liking something popular. I'm having an okay time.
I am deeply looking forward to seeing all of the, I forget her name, the hippo lady cosplays at Dragon Con this year.
That's going to be great. yeah, so that's my stuff. That and I got my new roof, which was nice after 3 days of incessant pounding on the ceiling, or not on the ceiling, well, kind of the ceiling, if you consider the roof the other side of the ceiling. Yeah, so that's good. I've got a new roof.
Excellent.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Not a whole heck of a lot on it, honestly. I helped a friend move in 88 degree weather, so that was fun.
That was very nice of you to do.
Yeah. So you know, probably lost a few pounds in sweat, so you know maybe helping me with my fitness goals.
Yeah,
and you did your good friend deed for the quarter, so you can slack off now.
yeah exactly. I mean, I'm surprised I'm even here. Yeah. Yeah, no, not too much. Just like I said last time, getting ready for the con.
Cool. Any like major progress on your costume stuff or?
I've got everything ordered for the bunny costume. I've got patterns cut out for the jacket I'm making, and completed a hat that was the last thing for my like Japanese delinquent kind of River City Ransom type outfit.
Cool.
So
nice.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
Not a whole lot. We talked before the pre-roll. I saw We Own the City, which is the new David Simon TV show on HBO. That's
much
pretty
more
good.
Interesting than We Rent This City.
Yeah, much better than We Built This City.
But it, yeah, I mean, it's kind of depressing. But if you like the insightfulness of The Wire, it has a lot of that. A lot of it's maybe not as subtle as The Wire. There's like several times where it's like an old character is just explicitly like, yeah, the cops are pretty shitty today. They weren't always like this, but now they are. And it's like, all right.
Weird. Okay.
But Midsummer is this coming week, so I'm going down to Portland for a Midsummer party.
Ooh,
excited about that.
Nice.
It is really weird to me to consider the degree to which like what The Wire was completely before 2016 and like America going full crazy
phones. It was when burner phones were a thing.
Yeah so it's very crazy to me that was made before things went full crazy.
Well, yeah. That's
the warning signs were there.
Oh, they were there, but you know.
The and We Own the City, there's it takes place like over the course of like maybe 10 years or so, but there's a lot of like jokes about some of it takes place in like 2015 and stuff, and they're like, well, when Hillary's going to be the president, we'll be able to do this and this with our budget. And it's like, ooh.
You're
nah.
What city is it set in?
Baltimore.
Oh, why?
They're from Baltimore and they know the city really well.
Yeah, David Simon's a Balmer guy.
He worked for the newspaper in Baltimore for like, I don't know, 10 or 20 years.
Yeah,
Baltimore is the one city I hope never to return to.
Think of it this way. They have like accurate and insightful writing because of it, because they know it so well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like we're all caught up, at least until we, you know, and I know some things. I know how you've been spending a little bit of your time, but I don't know what games you've been playing. To find out, I'm going to need to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so, brief though they may be. Dennis, I'm going to go to you because you have been away the longest.
Yes, indeed. Like I said, not too crazy much new, but a big new game that I started playing on Father's Day, which was God of War.
Oh, the
very
2018
appropriate
one?
Father's Day game.
Yes, the 2018 reboot. Which you know, it has been on my PS4 bucket list. Like, I knew I was going to play this game. I just, you know, I had so much other stuff. I need to get off my ass and do it. And it going free on PlayStation Plus combined with Father's Day was the impetus that I needed to get it started.
Nice.
Have you started yelling boy at your kids around the house?
I've tried to contain myself, but yes, it's been good times. It really, like, I guess that's the first thing I'll say is it is a little too real. A little too true to having a 7-year-old tromping around with you day to day. Like, there's just so many moments that are a little too perfect.
Like, I can tell you're trying to be good, but oh, come on.
Yeah. Or my favorite one so far, we always joke that Luke asks, huh, questions.
Okay.
And it's just, it's not a question. It's just an observation, but it's usually a pretty stinging observation. Always ended with, huh. Like, okay. Man, you had a lot of cookies today, huh?
Ooh, oh, that's, I didn't know what you meant by ha questions, yeah. But, ooh.
Wait, whoa, so what are those for God of War, though? Like, oh, you've murdered a lot of dudes, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, you didn't go to the gym today, huh? Just, and it's like, you little, yeah, you know, like, and so, you know, I walk up to a door that's got this big magic seal on it in God of War and you know, hit the button to do it, and Kratos does a thing and it doesn't work, and still don't know how to use the magic glyphs, huh? So, I almost threw my controller at the screen. I was like, get your camera out of my house. So yeah, but that the like tonally that is right on. And just the way that Atreus, the kid that you're shepherding around, goes back and forth between, you know trying to do big boy things and be up for the task, and then also just doing stupid little kid things, like letting his imagination run away as he's talking about what might be around a corner or whatever. Like, it's very well balanced and true to my experience anyway.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, do they give any indication? Does his family know anything about his history?
Whatever. I'm like 4 hours in.
Yeah. He hasn't
too much on that.
Yeah.
Although it seems clear that some people at least know who he is. It's not clear if his wife knew the real deal. You know, she starts out with her funeral, so that'll only be revealed through kind of other means. And it's very clear that his kid has no idea.
Yeah.
In fact, they goes as far to say in a couple different places, like, well, we're nobodies.
So I guess that's my question. Has this been spoiled for you, or is it?
No. What do I know about this game? I've worked hard to keep myself relatively spoiler free.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that it was about carrying, you know, your wife's / his mom's ashes up the mountain. And I knew it was set in a Norse world that Kratos had gone over to for some reason. But I think that's really the only detail I've got on the plot.
Gotcha.
Did you know that the game was entirely one shot?
I remember you mentioning that at some point.
All right.
Yeah.
One shot. I mean, if you lose the game just deletes itself, or
one shot, cinematographically, like the movie Birdman. Yeah.
Or 1911. Mm-hmm.
Huh. The gun? That has like 8 shots.
1917. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I was gonna say
the prequel of 1917.
I was gonna say the Titanic.
Yeah, and it is I guess the Gordon Freeman Half-Life approach makes it feel not too incredible. Like, that games have been doing that for a long time, just like you're locked into this perspective, or we don't really hop out of it. Now, I don't remember exactly what the loading screen situation was in Half-Life and how it was broken up there.
There were loading screens.
There was like, it would pause and load.
Yeah. So you know, this doesn't need to do that. And so it's more impressive on that front. But I guess the highest praise that I can give it is that it completely fades into the background, that they're doing everything in one shot.
Yeah.
It feels very natural and doesn't go out of its way to assert itself.
Yeah.
It is interesting to notice that, like, when you go to the pause menu, even, like, you're still staring at Kratos's back. So, and same thing with, like, some of the crafting stuff and all that, which is great.
How about that, that first encounter with Baldur?
Yeah.
I was like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah. Well, it's in a game where literally you have immediately fought literally everything in your path to that point.
To
you know, come around a bend and see this blue guy that you're just kind of hang out with just feels very out of character. It's like, wait a second, like, nothing about the world that you've built so far tells me you would react this way.
Like, wait, isn't Baldur just a dude?
He's a dwarf, I think, right? Or no, I assume that's what he was.
Baldur's the guy who comes knocking at your door. He's the inciting incident.
The
funeral aside.
It.
Yeah.
He's just called the Stranger, I think.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I had some inklings based on how that fight plays out.
And the fact that he's like, I can't be killed.
Pronounced it. His name's Boulder because you uppercut him all the time.
and he throws you through boulders.
Yeah. No, that was a hell of a fight. Really enjoyed that. I guess the other two boss fights as such that I've hit so far is the first troll and then the fire troll. And the game has felt surprisingly light on those kind of iconic set piece boss fights.
Yeah.
Like, you know, God of War kind of felt like a ferry from one of those to the other.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And so, you know, maybe there's more coming, but to have the two that I've encountered so far just be different flavored versions of the same troll felt a bit weird.
Does it
still have the really overdramatic, like, you struggling to, like, I don't know, open doors and, like, break things and, you know, all that sort of stuff?
In a way, yeah. There's a bunch of chests and sarcophaguses that you open. And they do a really good job. Even picking up health gems, you, like, stomp them. So everything's got that feel of, like, opening with maximum force.
You guys
had a thought on the troll bosses.
I was going to say, it seems like the game kind of got the Uncharted treatment, where it's more like half and half of, like, fighting minions and, like, climbing around places, and then occasional boss fights are thrown in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, and well, and that's, let's talk about the combat. Cause there's nothing wrong with the combat. It is very well done and well polished, but it feels like from the God of War combat that I'm used to, it feels incredibly different. Like, it is Dark Souls-ized. It is, you know, light attack on R1, heavy attack on R2, watch your back, parry at the right time, like, that kind of thing. And I'm starting to unlock different combos, but at least for the 4 hours that I've played, it's been way more simplistic than I expected it to be.
All I remember about the combat is just, like, throwing and receiving the axe over and over again, and that being, like, that 100% feels of the combat good. For me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially if for larger enemies, like, you know, ranged is safer, so that, you know, that is part of the Dark Souls-izedness. You know, you can definitely abuse that a little bit if you feel like cheesing. But yeah, it just, I don't know. I wanted the way more grounded world. I appreciate, like, that's cool, and what they're doing with the story is really cool. But I still wanted a little bit of that flashiness with the combat that I just haven't gotten so far with the axe. Okay. So I don't know if you unlock more weapons. I don't know if you're just upgrading your axe. I don't know, you know, if his chain blades ever come back. There's a very prominent shot of him, like, you know, messing with the wraps on his arms early on. So, you know, it could be coming, but it is reduced in a way that Like, I get why they did it for all the other ways that they changed the game, and all the other ways that they changed the game are positive, but the way that they changed the combat, even though it fits with that, is not necessarily positive in my mind so far.
Does he ever say, like, I want to axe you something?
If he does, it's immediately preceded by, boy! they have a lot of fun with that. And the voice actor, you can tell, is just like, yeah, it's lean into all these different ways to say boy. Really, really stretch your talent on this one word.
That would be great behind the scenes. It's just the boy takes.
Yes. The God of War supercut, where it's just all the times he says boy. I guarantee you that exists.
Oh, I'm positive. Oh, yeah. Every time he says boy, it plays the entirety of B-movie.
Yeah. but yeah, so that's the new game I've been playing. I really love my time with it. And like you said, it's a little bit Uncharted-ized, but I think that's mostly to its benefit. I need to unlock more with the combat and just see a little more of it before I pronounce final judgment. But all in all, this is a version of God of War that I can wholeheartedly get behind. And yeah, absolutely all the dad feels for Father's Day.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hope you continue enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's God of War. I've played a little bit more of SnowRunners. Mm. And has anyone joined on me since I pimped that game?
Oh yeah, no, I've been playing a fair amount of that.
Excellent. I looked into co-op. It seems like you just have to do it as a part of your game world or start a new game for it, or I couldn't tell. Still having a great time with it. It's an excellent, surprisingly relaxed game for a game themed around driving monster machines around mountains. But it is, as I'm getting further in, showing a little thin on just how bad the menu and quest tracking and upgrade tracking systems are.
That's too bad.
Yeah, like you'll unlock something and it'll be like, oh, you can't get this upgrade on this vehicle. And then when you go back to the garage, there's no indicator of where it actually shows up. No kind of indicator of, like, when you level up, you can generally assume that something new has been unlocked. But there's no way to see, like, a highlight of what's new when you go into upgrade menus. The quest tracking, like, if you go to... There's no way to just look at what objectives are near you when you're playing, which is mind-boggling to me. Instead, you have to go and browse individually through each quest that is available and check to see which ones, you know, have an icon near you.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's really weird. I even then, like, I had one quest where it shows, it'll show you pickup points and drop off points. And I had to get two different materials, and I saw there were, you know, two pickup points, and I plan my route accordingly. And then, you know, here's how I'm going to go through those and get to the drop off point. I go to the first pickup point and get the first thing, and then go back to the map real briefly to see that the second pickup point has disappeared. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And I zoom out, and there's a third pickup point that is all the way across the map. I would have planned my route completely differently if I had seen it. And the two that it was showing me were two places to get one of the items, but there was no indication that was, like, the way it went down. It didn't, like, zoom out to show me the full scope of what the quest involved or anything like that. And it's just, I was like, man, you're wasting my time here. That's not cool.
I hate it when, like, the information interface around open world game is like that. That's
just brutal. Now the one thing I have heard from other people who enjoy the game is that there is a very strong mod community for SnowRunners, and I'm playing an Xbox Series X version, and there is a tab on the main menu for mods.
Oh, huh.
So it's apparently, you know, something that's very integrated into the game, and I have to imagine that I will be able to get some kind of improved quest tracking mod if I go browsing for it. So I hope that's there.
Yeah. Huh.
And that's me. I still wholeheartedly recommend the game. I will report back if I find a mod that makes the menus and the tracking a little higher quality of life.
Do. And I mean, that has been a positive development, mods coming to console versions of games. I want to hear how the experience is doing that.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, that's a, that's an alley-oop for David.
Go for it.
Since you've been playing.
Yeah. So, I've been, been playing that. I'd be interested to hear, like, what is your go-to, where are your go-to vehicles?
Pretty much the starter ones. If for a scout vehicle, it's just the first truck that you start in. And then the semi is, or the flatbed truck. I don't know what the next tier up is, the second one you find, right? Okay, I should say it's the second one you find. And I have not felt the need to switch away, and those kind of have the best setup for the stuff that I'm doing. And I haven't hit a point that I feel like I can't accomplish what I want with those. There are some DLC trucks that were just kind of in my inventory when I started, and I've looked at them. I used one of them once and was very underwhelmed with it. And so I just, the game hasn't pushed me to get a new truck, and I haven't gone looking for it. Like, it's getting the job done with what I have. What about you? Is that your experience too?
Yeah, that's basically been it. I've unlocked a number of extra ones. Unlocked a Hummer, that sort of thing. So I've been mainly playing in the first two areas, so Michigan and Alaska. I'm experimenting some. So actually, I'm frustrated. There's a weapon. Wow. Yes, there's a weapon in my quest against mud. Russia, you can get a scout vehicle that's just straight up an armored personnel carrier.
Okay. Nice.
I went to do that, was like rushing to get it, but then after you have to get to like the third map of Russia, and after the second one, when you try to go to the third one, it's just like, oh yeah, you have to have completed this quest.
Ugh.
And that was not telegraphed at all. So that is frustrating.
Huh.
But yeah, other than that, I've got the starter truck, the scout truck is what I use for the vast majority of things. It's the biggest problem I'm having with that is actually it's a small gas tank. So it can be very difficult not to run out of gas.
Yeah, I bought the roof rack that has extra gas for that.
I bought the first one that has that. I actually just unlocked and bought it. I haven't unlocked the larger one. Okay. But the one problem, the other issue with that is the vehicle is very top heavy.
Yep. Raised tires and gas on the roof means you are going to be rolling like a roly-poly.
Yeah. So I just bought the, there's a version of the winch that's battery powered. And cool. So you can use it even once your engine stalls out because you rolled the vehicle, you can use it to pull you back upright.
That has to make you just so much more reckless.
Yeah, pretty much.
no rules, really.
Also, I am very much of the... So, I realize this probably makes me a Philistine or whatever, but I think the game would be better with fast travel. Like,
it's just hard to think of a game that wouldn't be. Maybe Shadow of the Colossus, but...
Yeah, I mean, in this one, obviously the point of the entire game is getting around, but the problem is when it's just raw, like getting from one side of the map to the other, that's a thing. I have decided that at least for me, abusing the recover vehicles feature to go back to the garage is, in my opinion, completely within the spirit of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one fast travel they give you. Damn it, I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
I maintain the argument for, if you're not going to give us fast travel as you're thinking of it, give us at least fast travel where you can fast forward time for those places where it's like, okay, I know I can get up this hill. It's just a slog and I have to be in low gear.
Right.
Like, there's, especially as your trucks get better, there's significant stretches that are like that. And those could be, you know, played at 2x speed with no detriment to anyone.
Right. Yeah. I do like to imagine my headcanon for this game. I think this, I don't know if they ever talk about when it's set, but my theory is this is set in like our, you know, DeSanto's future, where, you know, the entire game is you building oil pipelines. And there is apparently no infrastructure whatsoever, because you appear to be literally the only one fixing any of these roads.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, you're not even doing that. Like, you're here to help a flood ravaged Michigan get back stable, and you're running all this stuff around, and you will clear rock slides, and you will like move down radio towers off the road. But at no point do you actually fix the roads.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a little...
You need to focus on what have the most impact, people. Come on.
Yeah, it is frustrating. This is a very unique version also of like the Dark Souls effect of when it's like... No, seriously, the only reason I'm going through this entire... dungeon is that my character refuses to climb over the ankle high fence. This has that, except it's like, oh yeah, my truck is stuck literally 5 feet away from the watchtower I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I would get out and walk literally a step, but also I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, I do think I would love to see an expansion for this that really went off the rails with, like, I don't know, the zombie apocalypse expansion, or like,
oh, that'd be great.
Post, like, you know, a Fallout, you know, post-apocalypse expansion, you know, something like that. I think would be a lot of fun.
Blood Runner, yes! It's already there! You get a chainsaw winch.
I would love the the harpoon from the Mad Max game.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just a distance winch.
Yeah. So yeah, that's all I've got for SnowRunners. Any questions about that?
No, continues to sound good.
Yep. Yeah, we'll give another try at co-op sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Other than that, kind of just grinding on things, been continuing on with No Man's Sky with the Leviathan expedition. So I've went and I now have bases on all 5 of the rally points. And so I pretty much just need to kind of clean up the couple of the challenges in order to complete the expedition. The biggest obstacle I'm having right now is one of the challenges is to collect 5 storm crystals, and those only appear on planets that have extreme storms.
Okay.
And so basically I have to find a hell world to explore. So right now I'm just kind of jumping through hyperspace from one planet to the other. There's different levels of stars. So you have to have better hyper drives to get to, it's like you start at yellow, then it's red, green, and blue. And blue stars are significantly more likely to have extreme environment. Planets.
Okay.
So I unlocked the hyperdrives for that. I am following that. Honestly, not anything too earth shattering on that. Kind of just continuing on, trying not to die.
I remember landing on a storm planet when I played it like a year or two ago, and you can get like stun locked if you like die, put your checkpoints on the planet before you died from the storm.
Oh yeah, there can be some problems. Luckily that won't be a problem in this mode, because if you die, it's permadeath, it just starts you over.
Oh. Well, you got that going for you then, huh?
It solves the one problem by giving you a far worse problem.
Yeah, I think my personal biggest frustration and something that actually could be a problem with this is that they added tornadoes, and so those will pick you up. It's frustrating, one, because in this mode, they turned fall damage way, way up. And then also it's frustrating because they can even pick you up when you're indoors.
What?
Oh.
How's that? Do they rip apart the house or just like within the house you get picked
up? Just within the house, you're kind of being flung around. So, you know, this is one of those things. No Man's Sky is a great game. It's very much trades on it's a vast number of different concepts and ideas all implemented to about the 90% level of polish.
Okay.
So, you know, that's one of the remaining 10% is that the tornadoes will kind of just screw with you indoors.
That's a bummer.
I always wonder, since it's, you know, seed based, that if there's some arcane reason, like, oh yeah, we tried to stop the tornadoes from working indoors, but it broke everything. Like every planet was a square.
It's always like really hard to do anything with base builders. Like I remember in Subnautica, fish always swim through your base. It's just because it's so open ended what the player's going to do. It's hard to like be able to cover every case.
How do the tornadoes complicate flying? Like if you're using your ship.
I haven't been able to tell them affecting flying, although I haven't experimented with it too much. One of the recent things they added, though, that's kind of interesting, is it used to be that pirates couldn't follow you into the atmosphere.
Okay.
But now they can, so now you can actually have, you know, planetary dogfights and stuff.
Mm. That sounds awesome.
Oh, God. It does, but I remember the atmosphere being pretty, or feeling pretty thin once you were in it. Like, there wasn't a lot of room for dogfight type maneuverability. So.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely a thing. They also seem to have made them a lot more intelligent in terms of, you know, they will actively try to, like, run away when their shields drop and, you know, things like that. So yeah, they're definitely making some improvements. It's still not a particularly great flight sim, but you know, it's definitely growing.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm just continuing on with Destiny. I've unlocked a bunch more of the weapon crafting components, so that's pretty cool. Just kind of zeroing in on trying to find my ideal set of weapons.
Continuing with the weird AI generated weapons.
Yes. Nice. And then I think next is going to be, there's a set of kind of Roman themed weapons and a set of kind of horror themed weapons. So yeah, those are the ones I'm kind of continuing through.
What are the Roman themed weapons?
So the one of the factions is the Cabal, who are basically space rhinos in power armor.
Okay.
But they are very much themed on the Romans, which is weird. How would aliens be themed on a Earth culture? I don't quite understand that.
It could be like a Stargate kind of thing. Maybe we're themed after them.
That's true. Yeah. No. Okay. Ancient aliens. Ancient space rhinos. But yeah, their weapons, there's a bunch of like, it's super hard to explain. Basically, they've got a lot of like cloth accents on the guns that have kind of the Roman-esque, block prints and stuff.
So they're still guns. I thought these would be like, I don't know, like stadium type weapons or like,
No. Still pretty much guns. They have, your non-gun weapons you have right now are swords, which are mostly kind of katana-esque, and spears.
Okay.
Which inexplicably, in addition to stabbing things, can also shoot energy orbs.
Hmm.
That part of Spears got lost when we took them from the aliens.
Yes. Yeah. Huh.
So that was actually the primary function. The stabbing was just a perk.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that strikes me as a missed opportunity, though, is, and apparently this was from previous things, but I guess the emperor of the space rhinos was, you know, super into building these kind of robotic contraptions that would serve as, you know, sort of gladiatorial challenges. And so my understanding from speaking to people in the Slack is that it's actually like in the raid for that character, after you defeat him, you find out it's actually animatronic that you're fighting. And so it's somewhat unclear whether your character has ever actually seen him. But the when you're exploring the ship that's you know, now become haunted, the leftover animatronics have gone Five Nights at Freddy's style.
Okay.
But there is one of the new obstacles is, you know, enemies that are completely invulnerable that just kind of chase you, and so you just have to outrun them. But they didn't use the animatronics for that, which I think is a missed opportunity because they're creepy as hell. But
yeah.
Yep. As you might be able to tell, the plot line continues to make very little sense.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to start now.
I just like the common pattern in like science fiction things to do space animal of some kind, like space lions and Twilight or Imperium. Or,
it just, yeah. Just really shows limitations of imagination.
Well, like, I like to think of like the entire like story that led to them being spacefaring creatures. Like, there had to have been a Rhino NASA program at some point in time. You know?
No, it's the, you know, the concept artist got pictures of rhinos. Like, I want something like this, and they're like, nah, you're just gonna get that. It is hard though. Like, the limits of imagination. You just made me think. Luke's birthday is coming up. My 7-year-old, and he goes, Dad, for my birthday, I want you to get something that I'm just totally not expecting.
Mm.
I was like, okay, that's a very tall order. Yeah. So yeah,
so
I don't know what you do with an alien that you're just totally not expecting.
Give him a crock pot.
See, this scenario I always wanted. Wow,
sorry. Continue.
The scenario I always wanted to see is I don't know, one of these Mass Effect games or Star Trek or whatever. I want to see when one of these like cat people or something meets a furry.
Ooh. Ooh.
So just like, you guys are way too into us. We're going to need some distance here.
Oh,
nice. Anything else besides those three?
I, inspired by the Slack, I have reinstalled Vampire Survivors and am seeing what I've missed in that. But honestly, I don't have a whole lot to report. Report yet, other than like bats of dicks.
Yeah, that's true in Castlevania base game too. The a lot of the, you know, hatred goes towards the Medusa heads, but the bats are problems.
That's true. I mean, the Medusa heads are, it's implied, are just automatons, whereas the bats know what they did.
Oh man, nice. Ben, how about you?
All right, I got two small free games. So I've been playing Super Auto Pets as a filler for, hey, I want to play something for 30 minutes that has some amount of competition with other humans. Kind of fits the same slot as like Storybook Brawl or something like that.
I saw the Storybook Brawl booth at Origins, and I almost went up and said something, but I was like, that guy is a rando. Yeah, that guy's a rando working the booth. He had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Not worth it. Also, the story that we have for our final thoughts or whatever will have to do with that in a weird way. Anyway, Yeah, so it's fine. Super Auto Pets, you know, it's like a drafting type game. You pick it. It has a cute animal aesthetic to it. And like each animal has a different like thing that they do, a different effect of some kind. And so the idea is like every round you have 10 gold. Everything costs 3 gold and rerolling costs 1 gold. And so you figure it out from there. It has the same sort of mechanics of a lot of auto battlers, where once you get 3 of a thing, it'll level up. And there's, I think, 3 levels to everything. And so you just try and draft some sort of synergy of some kind. It has a pretty good range of different strategies to go for. There are certain animals that are kind of OP and that can kind of like win out really quickly. The other thing that's interesting about it is it's very asymmetric, where there's no time constraint in playing it. It just matches you up with somebody who's at the same like maybe like round number that you are about, and you play them. And the way it works is you have 10 hit points and there's 10 trophies to win before you like win. And whichever one happens first, you either die or you get 10 trophies, then that's the end of the game. Hmm. The thing that makes it a little bit different, though, is at the beginning of the game, you lose like 1 hit point per round if you lose. At the end of the game, you lose 3 hit points per round. So it kind of ramps up. So losses become more detrimental. If you draw, nobody loses hit points. That's a way to kind of kick the can. But yeah, there's some interesting synergies that are there. You know, there's some things that'll like benefit off of taking damage and surviving. And there's some animals that'll damage your own units. It's similar to a lot of things where it's like there's characters or creatures and spells. They have the same sort of thing here. It's like there's animals and there's like food that you can feed them that'll buff them in some way. Mm-hmm. And there's creatures that revolve around that, where it'll either like cheapen the cost of spells or increase the buff of spells, that sort of thing. So there's some interesting synergies there. You can just go completely on a strategy where you just make a huge person in the front and they can and just plan on like taking out the entire team. There's also some like flexibility to like when you can win. It has similar thing to Magic, where it's like aggro red versus control blue, where you can just try and pick like short, powerful creatures and like try and get 10 wins in immediately without losing, versus trying to build a really synergistic build and like try and go longer and get a win, like playing long term. The creatures in the store like level up every like 3 matches or so, and it goes like 1 to 6. And so the creatures towards the end start to be like really, really powerful and can kind of take over games. So you can try and build towards them in the future. The other thing is, if you level up a creature, you get a creature in the market that's 1 level higher than where you're at in the store. As a way to try and like get something powerful going. Anyway, yeah, it's a cute little game. It's a time filler game, or you know, kind of scratches that sort of itch if you're looking for it.
Is there other people who did an Exodus out of Storybook Brawl because of their blockchain stuff? That was the reason, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a consensus of like what they went to, or you know? Is it just kind of like everybody Jerry Maguire'd out and didn't take a team with them and they went to their own separate ways?
Like the people who like were developers on the game, or the people who played the game?
Oh no. I mean, just people who play it, who were like, hey, I'm not cool with this. You know, who were looking for another auto battler deck builder kind of thing.
This one's been around for a while, so I don't know. I'm not sure where people jump to, and like people jumped from Storybook Brawl like 3 months ago. So
yeah,
I'm not sure where everyone landed, you know, or I don't, you know, this is just a one that is out there that I had seen some streamers play, so I was interested in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how long of legs the game has. Like, I mean, I've been able to get the 10 wins or so. It maybe took like 2 or 3 hours before I got my first like win. So it's like maybe that bit of a learning curve, but otherwise it seems pretty fair. Maybe one of the coolest features the game has is, at the beginning of the game, it gives you a choice to name your team, and you have 3 adjectives and 3 nouns, and you get to pick your team name by picking 1 of the 3 of each of them. That's maybe one of the most unique parts of the game.
So I'm surprised, as a actuary, you have not like crunched the numbers on what is the optimal strategy for your, you know,
characters. I mean, it's mostly by feeling, where it's like, oh, this animal is kind of useless. I don't do like summons at all. Like there's a strategy of like, oh, and this one dies, like summon a 1/1 in its place. And then there's like other animals that support that, like where it's like whenever you summon someone, give this like +3 attack or something like that. That is kind of a strategy that seems like it is, there's like one, specifically one animal that will completely counter that entire strategy. Mm-hmm. The hippo, and the hippo is like a pretty OP animal that can just like outright win the game. Anyway,
what about the alien rhinos?
yeah, they haven't, that must be in like a DLC coming up, I guess. They haven't landed yet. I think they have a regular rhino, but it's also like not very impressive, but, yeah, so I haven't like crunched any numbers or anything, but it's mostly just like kind of like flying by sight sort of thing, where it's like, yeah, these are kind of unimpressive, or these can too easily be beaten, whereas like these kind of have some potential. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't really watched anyone play it since playing it myself, so I would like to see people who are really good at the game play it and see like what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
The other game I got is a game that I'm not really recommending necessarily. It's a game called The Looker, and if you look at
this is font, very much a Ben game.
If you look at the font or the art style of this game, you can immediately tell that this is is a tribute / parody game of The Witness. More specifically, this is like a single individual made this game in Unity, released it on Steam for free. It is very inspired by The Witness. It is a Witness tribute game, a Witness parody game. Uh-huh. The puzzles are deliberately frustrating, and but in a funny way, kind of like a lot of them. Don't get me wrong. I rage quit this game, and I'm not going back to it. But I also enjoyed playing this game, so you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, joke games exist. There can be joke games. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think this came out within the last week, too. And so the person who made it, I think he graduated like 2 or 3 years ago from college and is kind of using this as like a way to be like, hey, I'm looking to join game dev team.
Yeah.
But here's like a game. Check it out. Yeah. And in that sense, the game is good considering it's a one person team game. Mm-hmm. First game out of college, like that aspect makes it impressive. But yeah, it's definitely kind of, you know, it's not a AAA game by any means. And so if you're holding it to that standard, it's a little rough around the edges. But I don't know what to say about this. It's a joke game. It's making fun of The Witness, kind of, but it also tells that it really reveres The Witness because they're making an entire game that's inspired by it. So
yeah, it's a parody where the person spent so much time with the original game, loving it, that they, you know, these jokes start writing themselves in your head.
Yeah, parody can be sincere. Yeah,
and I'll spoil one part of the game because this is what I did when I immediately started the game. Is you start out in a tunnel the same way you do in The Witness. I immediately turn around and it's like, oh, you can go much farther back in this one than you could in the original game. So I immediately run backwards. There's a sign, and basically what this has instead of the witness panels is it kind of has like mazes that you can do, like that, like when you're a kid, you know, where it's like, you have like a pen that you can draw on a board and each board will have like start and end on it. And you have to connect the start to the end. And you can connect it to the end of the start. It's fine. But that's like what it is instead of the witness puzzles. Uh-huh. And so if you go backwards at the beginning of the game, you come to a board and it says like, delete your game. It's like, connect these two if you want to do it. And so it's like, oh, okay, I'll do that. And like deletes the game and quits it. And so it's like, all right, yeah, cool.
Nice.
So I don't know what I expected.
Yeah. So there, it has that sense of humor to it, but there are some good like lateral thinking puzzles to it. Mm-hmm. So, if you like The Witness, maybe this is worth checking out. I can't say this is like an amazing game that'll change your perspective on games or anything, but it's a good joke if you really like The Witness. So. Yeah.
No, yeah. I may take this to Abject Suffering, actually. I think it might be. We've done joke games there in the past.
Okay.
I think this might be fun. So.
Yeah. Right on.
Nice.
That's all I got.
The Looker. and
which the name The Looker is just like so on point for that type of game.
Before I saw the Steam images, which made me realize, oh, okay, that's what this is. It almost made it give, like, the just thinking about the name The Looker, it makes it sound like a dating game. Like, yeah. Oh, she's a looker.
I was worried that was the direction it was going. It's just so much better.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Guys, I started playing Arugues, and we're going to talk about them on the podcast in detail.
Oh, no.
There's nothing wrong with that per se, as long as you're not weird about it. It's just...
Yeah.
That caveat shuts down a lot of discussion of that kind of
thing. Jello brought that one and like evaluated it as a game, right?
The pigeon one?
The what?
The pigeon one?
No, I mean, that's more of like just like a visual novel. Like, that's a joke to it. You're thinking of Hotful Boyfriend. No, there was one like explicitly sexy game that she brought and like just talked about it as a game, not as, you know, prurient material. Can't think of a non-gross way to say that. Why am I drawing the line here on all the all the gross shit that I've said? Anyway, I didn't mean to jump in here and say no, we can do that.
Well, if that's okay, there's another game I've been playing that I want to talk about.
So recently it was one of my friend's birthday and we all have like a Discord channel together. And so as a joke, I got him like a 99-cent Arugue game. That was like the trashiest one I could find. Yeah. And so everybody dogpiled on it. Everyone bought him Arugues for his birthday.
Hey, what if he awakened something in him? That's
maybe. Yeah.
No judgment.
He hasn't been out of his room for 3 months. So
he's with his girlfriend in Europe right now hiking. So I hope it doesn't do anything too crazy, but we'll see.
I mean, that's great. Unless they're both into it.
Hey, you know.
Yep.
Chase your bliss.
Nice. For me, I just this weekend like got ahead on WoW stuff, which means that I will have more in the future, which is nice now that I have a little bit of breathing room. But for right now, just a little bit more of the quarry, which is frustrating because that game is so story based, it is difficult to talk about things that happen. Also, I haven't made very much progress in it, but I've got two thoughts about this. Mm-hmm. The first one is, man, fuck Jacob. they hate that guy. No, I just he's the meathead guy. I think that's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, the kind of the person who screws everyone because he's horny. Wait, no. As I almost said, he screws everyone because he's horny. But that's not the way. That said, that sounds different. No, he traps people at the place intentionally in order to try and get back with a girl who dumped him. Irredeemable, that fella. That's a spoiler for the first like hour of the game. I feel okay there. But he's the only character who sticks out to me as like this is a problem. You know, mm-hmm. just to like him. And I like that nobody else seems to have any patience for him. So at least there's that. So that's my character observation for right now. Who knows if he redeems himself or dies ignominiously. That's that right there.
Probably both are possibilities, right? With how you play the game.
It depends. I mean, you know, because you've beaten it. But
I mean, I will say, you can kill everybody in the game.
Ooh.
If you're bad at the game. I think it's the same way in Until Dawn, too.
Yeah, everybody can die in Until Dawn. Yeah.
It's very judgmental. Like, they can all die if you suck.
I mean, a lot of it's based on QuickTime events, so, yeah, I mean... Yeah.
Isn't there a disable QuickTime events, though?
There is, where it, yeah.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, there, I think there's like the movie mode version of it, where you're just kind of making path choices. There's lots of accessibility options in it. I was actually kind of surprised, pleasantly surprised at them including that kind of stuff, which is nice. Related to the QuickTime events, there are two mechanics that I feel like they have done a very good job. You know, finally, after all these tries, they actually have like made them interesting. So shooting in Until Dawn was basically just a timed little event where you were moving a cursor over a thing and then it would, then it would fire. Kind of didn't matter. Like, things would freeze for just a little bit and give you time to aim. Yeah, not terribly interactive there. And I think it's pretty similar in the Dark Picture Anthology stuff that I've played. In the Quarry, there's a little bit more gradation to it. So every gun that you have is a shotgun, just because that's all that's lying around the camp. That's all the kids can have access to. What's that?
Shotgun camp.
Yeah, I was going to comment, but I'm like, no, this is America. That tracks.
Yeah. So what's actually kind of like, yes, you are still aiming at stuff, but things don't really slow down. Instead, you're given an option of whether or not to shoot. And also, like, how close up do you want the thing you're shooting to be to determine how far the spread is? So it's a little bit like playing chicken, where you're just kind of like, okay, something's coming toward me. Do I trust myself to shoot it when it's close, when I'm going to do the most damage, or do I want to take like a safer shot when it's far away? And that's cool. I like that a lot, actually. Nice. Does that comport with your experience, Ben?
It's kind of like a three outcome thing. It's like shoot, hit, shoot, miss, or don't shoot.
Yes.
And yeah. you pick that, which one you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it, certain situations, I think it's really funny to just shoot and purposely miss.
Yeah. And it's just like miss is not necessarily like, you know, is your cursor over the thing or not, or is your flashlight over the thing or not? It, you know, it's it, is, mm-hmm. is it far, is it close enough that you would actually make a difference with it?
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think I'm trying to triangulate where you are here. What's the last like scene you played? Is it night yet?
No, it is not night. It's close.
Okay, it's sunset.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. The other mechanic is the hold your breath. So mm-hmm. in Until Dawn, because that game is PlayStation exclusive, they were able to count on you having a 6-axis controller or the DualShock 4 or whatever it is. Something that had the gyroscope in it, which would detect whether or not the controller was moving. This actually worked out pretty well. I thought anyway, because you don't realize how much your breathing actually moves a controller that you're holding, you know? Mm-hmm. So sure. There were times when I would fail, you know, something would be like right up in my face and I'd be trying, you know, holding still. And my focus would go away and then I would, you know, would shake it. And then the thing would get me. That was cool. For the Dark Picture Anthology, they were unable to, assume that you would have, they were unable.
6 axes.
Yeah. The gyroscope. Right. So instead they replaced it with, it was you conscious, like it was the same thing, which is you're trying to make something not notice you, but it was you tapping buttons in rhythm, to your heartbeat. Like trying to keep your composure, and for all the world, the actual effect was you consciously making your heartbeat, which is imagine that yeah. curse. There's a curse in Dungeons and Dragons where the like your mind can be affected, so it turns off your autonomic breathing. Like, you know, if you're going to breathe, you have to think about breathing. Imagine what a hell that would be. The Dark Pictures Anthology presumes that the same thing can happen to you, except it's anxiety and it's not your lungs, it's your heart. And they would try and trip you up. There would be, you know, the speed would vary. It would, you know, just imagine a PlayStation controller. It would have you hitting the X button and then it would throw you a triangle button. You know,
they start playing Into the Fire and Flames.
Yeah. Wait a second, this is Guitar Hero.
Yeah. Not that great of a system. It, you know, not enough to like fully sync those games. I still think they're good. It's, you know, just not ideal. I think the Quarry does a better job at it, which is it's less about any kind of manual dexterity, and it's more so you press a button to hold your breath. And a meter is, you know, rolling down. And when that meter runs out, your character will gasp and make their, you know, and yeah, make their presence known. Yes. Though they'll alert whatever's after them. You can decide to stop holding your breath at whatever time you want. And that will, you know, make the enemy can, you know, come after you. But there may be a better time than the very end to like make your escape and, you know, run away. Right. So you have to watch, you know, like visually this whatever is looking for you, look for you, follow the audio cues, you know, like if it's snuffling around you, like it's introduced with a wild boar. Kind of knocking over one of your dudes, trying to get back at its little baby piglet, which is fun. And you have to like, you know, listen, you know, okay, is it interested? Is it mad? Is this a lull where I can get up and go, you know, stuff like that. So it's, you're kind of playing chicken with your breath, thinking, okay, is it going to leave before I run out of breath, or do I get up and run at a moment that seems more opportune, which is cool.
I will say this is one of the better mechanics in the game, because like there's times where somebody will search for you until the very end and mm-hmm. you have to wait that long. And there's times where it's like your window is right at the beginning. And if you don't take it, you just watch them slowly come towards you. And you're just like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any way to predict?
No. You just have to let go when you're in the clear, quote unquote. So, yeah. But the thing is, it's like, how clear is in the clear? You know, mm-hmm. it's like if someone's looking for you and their back is turned towards you, is that good enough to escape? And that's what you have to try and like decide.
Yeah. So. It's you are reading the situation with imperfect information, trying to find the right opportunity to go.
Yeah. It's a great, that is a great mechanic.
What's that, David?
Oh no! I did say.
Okay. I said that's terrifying.
Okay, yeah, I thought that sounded like David to me. Yeah, no, it's neat. So I think that, like both of those take kind of missed opportunities in the past, and they feel a little bit better, a little bit more natural to me. Now,
Cole, can you please stream this game this Friday? It's a horror game.
I know. I'm gonna stream it. So streams are gonna resume first weekend in July.
Okay.
I don't know if this is going to be the first one that I'm going to do just yet. I want to beat it before I stream.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to have two games going concurrently, but like, I'm not necessarily invested in like, oh, I don't want to play it cause I just beat it now, because it'll be different. You know, I'll consciously make different choices to see how things go. But yeah, I definitely intend to stream it.
Cool.
Because everything needs to be content.
No, well, I mean, it's this is a game that is very enjoyable to see like what other choices other people make. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
The thing that would trip me up is I need to figure out what Jala is going to do with her streaming it. I do not want to counter program against her.
Okay, gotcha. Yes.
So I want to try and be considerate with that, or at least ask her before I make a decision to see how she feels.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yep. But no, I think that both of those are cool decisions, and it's not a game that a lot of people talk about the mechanics, and I think the mechanics of these kinds of games are really interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. But that's it. That's what I got.
Multiplayer.
Before we start this next segment, somebody has their window open and I'm hearing birds, and it's bringing a very pastoral kind of sense to the show, and I'm here for it.
Ooh.
It could be me. There's a smidge, like a half inch crack on it.
Who's far enough west that birds would still be active right now?
See, here's the thing. Ben's to blame. No, yeah. It's good. I like it.
There's sometimes like seagulls will make their way. This I'm not kidding. And seagulls, and apparently they really, huh?
Nothing.
They really cut through the microphone. Like no matter where they are outside, they'll get picked up.
They cut through everything. Yeah.
Millions of years of evolution designed to ruin podcasts.
Because they knew what we could accomplish. Yeah. So now let's start with the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah. So when we record this, we are just a couple days past Juneteenth. So happy Juneteenth to everyone. And inspired by that day, we want to know, who are some of your favorite Black characters in gaming?
Yeah, good question. Timely. Mm-hmm. Let's get right into it. Ollie says, Alex Vance. Very few characters are as perfectly pitched as she is. Yeah, Alex Vance is a good answer. I really don't like seeing anything related to Half-Life now, because we're not going to see any more of that. And yeah, I really wanted to, you know, episode two ends on such a sad moment for her, you know, it's a, yeah, and that's it. That's the end. Bye.
Yeah. It's a real Douglas Adams exit.
Yeah.
The narrative matches reality of Half-Life being dead as well.
David, what does Sean say?
Sean says, "Die Hard Man" from Death Stranding. The performance of Tommy Earl Jenkins is outstanding. The scene where he states about his guilt for killing a certain character is easily the most memorable performance I've seen in a video game.
Yeah, that's a good character. It's a fucking dumb name, but...
I was going to say, this is a Kojima game, so I believe that it's actually... someone called Die Hardman. Otherwise, I assume it would be like a meme reference.
Yeah, no, it's Die Hardman. Yeah,
it's both. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, like it's a good character, very affecting story. Like his motivations are neat, but then also he has that name. So, yeah,
fair.
I swear that game is worth playing if you have the patience for a game that long, but.
Yeah, that is on the upgraded version of PlayStation Plus now, whatever, you know, PlayStation Plus Extra or you know, whatever it is. And
PlayStation Plus Plus, they're going with Newspeak.
Well, this is this is probably the right group to ask, but if I enjoy SnowRunner, will I enjoy Death Stranding?
There's commonality.
I kind of thought there might be, so yeah. Yeah. Worth a second look now on my part.
Yeah. And like I don't know what your budget is for buying games, but like the director's cut version is like, it can't be more than $30 at this point. So.
Well, and whatever a monthly subscription is, I can buy 1 month of that.
Oh yeah. And play it in the month.
No bad if I want.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, "Baird is the poster child, but I've always had a soft spot for the activist rebel group leader, Sad Dad himself." I'm a little bit at a loss here. What is Sad Dad a character name in Final Fantasy?
No, no, it's not a Die Hardman kind of thing. That's more of a character trope kind of deal. Ethan from Heavy Rain, a little bit of Kratos. Like Sad Dad games are a thing.
Gotcha. All right. Especially in Final Fantasy, a series that loves the semi-emotionally stunted, closed-off men having an effusive, speaks-his-mind, hard-fighter, hard-lover like Barrett has always been a favorite of mine. Let's hope they do his arc a little more justice than the original game on their second go-around.
I'm real curious to see how they handle Corel. Basically, anything beyond Midgar is, yeah, I don't know. That's a different conversation, but I agree. I agree with you, Jeff. And Dennis, Greg continues about Barrett. Good.
Oh, it's still Ben then, right?
Oh, no, this is a different person.
What? Oh, okay. Here we go. Ah, okay. I saw Barrett at the start and I was like, we just read that one. Yep. Greg. I feel like
Dennis should read all the Barrett ones.
Yeah. Spelled with one T though, so it doesn't qualify. So I also have to second Barrett. He's the one who first came to mind when I read this question. I also love the treatment they gave him with the remake, made him more complicated and lifelike with the extra time spent on him, while also making him even more of a badass. And the first time I heard him singing the Final Fantasy victory theme, I lost it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He stands out as, you know, I only played a little bit of the remake, but just the amount of nuance that his character and the like character model had was really good.
Yeah.
And him, you know, taking off his glasses and just transforming into a different person when he's in the bar.
Yeah. Him getting back to the bar for the first time, getting back to Marlene is great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Patrick writes, Zavala in Destiny 2.
Yes.
He's a great leader that we are now learning more about his history. And yes, I know he's technically blue, but since he is voiced by Lance Reddick, and Lance seems to love his character, he qualifies as a black character in my mind, because he wouldn't be Zavala without the voice.
Yeah, so that's why I was wondering, like, the voice actor... is black, the You know, character model 10, you know, seems to be kind of has some of that look, but is blue. Yeah. So does that count?
The source of the glue is
I put it in the same category as like Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. I, you know what? I am not going to sit here and trying to find what is black and not.
Yeah, that's probably a good choice.
That's a good
crowd.
Yeah. I'm gonna let it fly.
Yeah, no, Zavala is amazing.
Yeah.
Especially with Cade, Nathan Fillion's character out, he's, at least in my opinion, is kind of who the game is crystallized around.
Yeah. Nice. Let's see here. That was me. David, what does Chris say?
Chris says, Lee from the first season of Telltale's Walking Dead was a pretty good character. I could probably extend that to Clem, but I have yet to get really far into season 2 and beyond. Maybe one day. I'm very confused because Clem is a, I know as a important character from Warframe, but it does not make sense in this context.
Yeah. That would be Clementine.
Yeah.
Okay.
This probably would have been my answer before I realized that's super obvious and I should probably think of something else.
Yeah. There's a reason it's obvious, though.
Like, yeah, no, it's great.
So damn good.
Wonderful, wonderful performance and just an excellent role. Like, if you look at the, you know, his impact over the entire series of the, you know, those, you know, I've only played the first two, but like, you know, he shapes Clem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of nuance to Lee. I like it. Let's see here. Ben, what does John say?
John says, Venom from the Guilty Gear series of fighting games. Dapper assassin who fights using a pool stick and summoning pool balls.
Oh. That sounds like Guilty Gear.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I can't say anything more about Guilty Gear other than, yeah, that's crazy. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Eli say?
Eli shows a picture of Eli from Half-Life 2. And he says, okay, yes, this is kind of a joke answer, even though anybody named Eli does go up quite a few letter grades for me. But it isn't as far at all from my more serious answer, Eli's daughter, Alex Vance. Just mm-hmm. a really strong character.
Yeah, Eli himself is good, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Eli ranks up there for me.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's good enough that, like, rescuing him is a you know, great idea for motivation in Half-Life Alyx.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Jeremy writes, this question made me consider something. Black characters are almost not present in games, and maybe about 200 of the games I own. The only character that came to my mind is Avery Johnson from the Halo franchise. We need more representation of each nation. Agreed. Yeah.
Word.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So
maybe not to dig too far into this. I think probably part of it stems from like the lack of diversity within like the programmer and like game developer industry as well.
Yeah.
Especially with respect to like male versus female representation.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Agreed.
Getting better slowly, but the faster the better.
Agreed. Let's see. David, what does Alex say?
Alex says, I don't know what to say other than that it is awesome that Miles Morales got his own Spider-Man game and it rules.
God, I need to play that.
I really need to play that.
Yeah, it's been enough time that I'm really hankering for a Spider-Man game, and I thought that maybe playing Incredible Hulk Ultimate Destruction for WoF would have, you know, like maybe ruined that open world Marvel game thing for me, but Miles Morales is so short, like it would be a snack that I could play and enjoy it. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, going to do my best to avoid spoilers for a 12-year-old game here because it's a really darn good game. Charles Milton Portal from Bioshock Minerva's Den. He's a great, well-rounded character overall. I really like that his blackness is neither his most prominent trait nor completely ignored. He's a character whose racial identity adds a lot to the story, but the story isn't about his racial identity. If I ever find myself represented in gaming, I hope it's done as well as this. It doesn't hurt that Minerva's Den is the best Bioshock content out there, too.
Yeah.
Where is Minerva's Den? Because I don't remember this location.
That is the story DLC for Bioshock 2.
Okay.
That was made by the folks who would go on, some of the folks who would do Walking Dead Season 1. And also, it was a lot of staff that was originally Gone Home in Tacoma, like Fulbright people.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So it's it is weird as a Bioshock game. But yeah, it's neat. I think I like the base game of Bioshock 2 more, but I recognize that I'm an outlier there. So, Yeah. And then finally, let's see here. Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I thought the Telltale writers did a tremendous job of writing Lee from the first season of The Walking Dead game. He truly feels like a fully realized human being by the time you arrive at the last episode. Also, a big shout out to Cole from Deathloop as well.
I forgot about Colt. Yeah. Colt and Juliana.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Good characters, both of them.
Generation gap and not allowing me to play games.
Let's see here. So because somebody a few people already took Lee, and I want to bring something additional. This may be a little bit of a similar situation to what's his name from Destiny 2, Zavala. But Silence from Horizon Zero Dawn, also performed by Lance Reddick. You know, there are some places his character goes, revelations that I do not want to spoil. But all of that feels motivated, right? It's and, you know, has the gravitas of a Lance Reddick, and his kind of interaction with and dependence on Aloy is it's fun. It is neat to see that interplay. Yeah, let's say Silence. And I haven't played Forbidden West, so if he, you know, commits atrocities, understand that I am making this pick with this pick with information that I have.
Spoiler tag, you know, you already know about some atrocities he's committed. So.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Where's the atrocity limit here? I was thinking of someone who is in your ear for a good portion of a game as well.
Who was that?
Three Dog from Fallout 3.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Ooh,
nice.
Yeah, he's just, you know, a constant voice accompanying you through the wasteland and, you know, commenting on your deeds and all that stuff. And then it was one of those things where, like, you know, hoping to see him, and you kind of get to know him through his broadcast before meeting him in person. And I always thought that was really fun. Kind of the same deal as with Silence. So
yeah,
he is. I think fares a little better plot wise overall. but yeah, a very, very cool dude.
Yeah, David, how about you?
So I don't know if this counts that it's a semi-generic character, but the paladin from Diablo 2.
Okay. He gets characterization. There are voice barks and stuff.
But that's true. That's true. I like the character. I think it's really interesting that they're... they're kind of weird Catholic pseudo religion stand-in is based out of kind of it's not really Africa, but still, you know, that's based in more of that sort of culture.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of like the fact that, like, if some sort of crazy like white supremacist dude was going to play such a game, of course they would want to play a paladin.
Of course.
So
and have that subverted would be
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I know. I always liked that character.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben.
Gotta do a shout out to Jolie Bindo from Knights of the Republic.
Oh yeah.
Pretty excellent character who is pretty done with the Jedi Order, or but is like kind of like a stand-in for like society, and like just points out all the hypocrisy and just wants to chill in his own swamp by himself.
Is that from the is he from the original Cutter, or is that Cutter 2?
He's from the original.
Oh, okay. I just I forget, because like that defining trait of just being fucking over the Jedi, that feels more like a Cutter 2 thing to me. Because
that was the basis of the game.
Yeah, that is more about like
just like Star Wars.
So Bindo predates Windu, right?
Correct. By thousands of years.
Suddenly Mace Windu's last name becomes cheating and a ripoff in my mind.
Well, I mean, this might have came out after the maybe it came out after the Attack of the Clones. It would have been really close.
Oh yeah, sorry. My predates question was related to the game's release.
Oh yeah, no, this is after it wasn't, I think Coder was 2004, so it's that's only like a year. Is it?
I think it might have been earlier than that. Let me look, hold on.
Because Mace Windu was in episode one, right?
Right so but it's definitely after 1999. Coder is,
yeah, but Mace Windu wasn't in the 1991, he was in the 2002 one. Knights of the Republic was in 2003, but they would have developed this before that release date. So I don't know. I think it's a tough call.
But they also, first appearance as the Phantom Menace.
Was Windu in that?
Oh, yeah, we're fucking arguing about Star Wars shit.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
not even Star Wars shit that you can have an opinion about. It's just stuff that can be fixed by Google.
Oh God.
Oh Lordy.
Good answers. Thank you. And definitely a lot of folks reminded me of people I forgot. Thanks for posting this, Dennis. Thank you everybody for writing in. If you would like to participate, watch for the prompts to go up on facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Monday afternoons. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Hopefully, that are excited to us, Dennis, or exciting to us, Dennis. What's happening with the Coder 2 port to Switch?
Yeah, we just talked some sugar about Coder. I'm going to rip that right back down to earth.
Yeah.
So the Switch port, it was discovered by fans who then had to kind of give the developer to the third degree to get actual confirmation of this. But it was discovered that in its current fully released, mind you, form, you can't actually finish the game. There is a bug, and I haven't played Coder 2, so I'm not, this is going to mean anything to me. But it is a bug right after the Basilisk crash cutscene.
Okay.
And it just crashes the game.
Oh, ironically. Wow.
And you cannot progress. There's no way to beat this game. So that's only about halfway through the game. And people are starting to reach that point on Switch. And I don't know how this slipped through, or like the number of fuck ups that have to lead to a, not just like a new game, but a ported game that has been out forever.
Yeah.
Being unplayable in the form of being unbeatable, I guess.
Yeah.
Is staggering. So they say they're working on a patch as fast as they can, but this is mind-boggling.
I'm
so much more charitable to these types of fuck ups, like having worked as a programmer, where it's like, probably like a junior dev pushed something on the latest release and they didn't check it, and it happens.
Yeah, but for it to be broken in a way that they don't know how to fix, I don't envy them being in this position.
And I guess, again, third hand, I understand that the launch of the original game was notoriously buggy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this is just nostalgia.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to make a joke about the original game not having all the content or whatever, since they cut so much out. I was like, maybe it's the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, I didn't know. I saw the headline, you know, before I looked at it. I was like, oh, they must mean that like they attempted to port it, but they couldn't because of this, you know, the source material. Like mm-hmm. there's just something, or maybe there's it's like, oh, there's no way to complete KOTOR 2. Obviously, they wouldn't have shipped a game you couldn't.
Right. Oh, okay. Like, oh, this you must not be able to 100% it because of some arcane glitch. No, yeah. You just halfway through the game cannot progress.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's pretty wild.
I guess I'll wait to buy that then.
Yes, no, that would be a wise choice.
I'd probably and I've got it on PC thanks to Ben actually.
You could play a real game of chicken with you know, how fast can you get to this point, and do you think they'll fix it by the time you get there?
And so. The real reason I would want to play it on PC is a little bit more pragmatic. I would want to patch in the cut content. So yes. Yeah, well, that's a bummer. I would not want to be an Aspyr, you know, they're Aspyr, the company who ported it, their reputation isn't spotless, but like generally they've been pretty good about making stuff that has been thought to be impossible to run on stuff run. So
making stuff that's playable.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is I do not envy those folks. Not one bit. I
mean, honestly, still the first half of KOTOR 2 is probably worth the whatever they're charging for it. Yeah, yeah.
Don't give them any ideas. The remake Final Fantasy 7 style.
Yeah. Let's see here. I've got my story. So big frustration about PC games that has not gone away is the question, can I run this game? It is wild to me that, say, on Steam, you can just buy a game, like you can hand over money for a game that will not run on the machine that you buy it on. There's no like, hey, heads up. Don't
they have
do
a
this.
Really good refund policy. Like I've refunded plenty of games that crash as soon as I try and buy it.
The thing is, for a long time they didn't.
Okay. Well, and still wild. You're not gonna get those however many hours installing the game back.
I mean, depend like at living where I live, downloading a 10 gigabyte game is takes a little bit, you know? Microsoft, just in another move that makes Game Pass, although this isn't limited to Game Pass, but Microsoft has, I think, done some really good work here. They're going to be pushing an update to the Xbox PC app, which is where you get your Game Pass, as well as any, you know, games that you buy directly from Microsoft. They're pushing an update that will check and see before you download something, like, hey, does this run? They've got a way of like looking at it to say like, yeah, this plays well on similar PCs. Like they've gathered people, you know, click the button that says, hey, can we get usage data from you? So it's not just like, hey, do you meet the minimums, but like, is this, you know, ending up to be satisfactory, right? Which I think is a good way to handle it, because no just straight up spec kind of thing is going to catch every problem. And obviously this
oddly enough, satisfactory will not run great on my machine.
That's a shame. Satisfactory is a good game.
There's another thing that's weird about this too, where it's like Windows 7 can still run a lot of games that are on Windows 10. It's just that they can't guarantee like every sort of call.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of things like this will say that you can't run it, but you actually can. I know that doesn't apply to many people, but
kind of making it a little bit fuzzier and pulling in extra data like that to me is a good use of that data gathering, you know? So go for it. I won't say that very often. So
the one thing I want them to add to this is right now you can see that for every individual game you look at, but there's no way to filter games by that.
Right.
Because I would love to just, you know, go browsing and filter out anything that I know won't run.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nice thing about this is features can change, but I thought that was a nice move on their part.
Well, yeah. And that seems like a nice alley-oop to the next.
It does. Know,
if this gets traction, I'm sure it's easy for them to add that.
Yeah. You know, just dynamic tags or something like that. Yeah. Ben, you alluded to this when we were talking about Storybook Brawl, but tell me about this fully justified drama.
I'm not the only one dissatisfied with companies taking up blockchain stuff.
Yep.
Gloomhaven, which is made by Cephalofair Games. Whatever. It's a company by Isaac Childress.
Nailed it.
Is the game? Yeah, thank you.
Cephalofair Games by Isaac Childress.
Thank you. They're moving off of Kickstarter because apparently Kickstarter has started to pursue like blockchain options to their company, but mm-hmm. it's somewhat vague what exactly they're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
But was quoted to say like similar things of what I felt about Storybook Brawl, where it's like, well, there's no evidence of like this having a positive effect for the users at the company. And to the contrary, there's plenty of examples of people fraudulently using this type of technology and promising a bunch of stuff and like mm-hmm. kind of using Ponzi schemes things. So they're moving to a company called BackerKits, which is just like a competitor to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of a big deal because they're one of the bigger success stories from Kickstarter. So yeah, and I'm sure whatever game they make next, whatever sequel to Gloomhaven or whatever, will probably sell a whole bunch. So,
yeah.
A nice thing about BackerKit is that a lot of people will already have a BackerKit login because it's used as the pledge manager for games that originally are on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Because in addition to apparently having some shit ideas about where they want to take the company, Kickstarter also has some problems with their current service where once you back a game on Kickstarter, they really don't have the back end put together for like, you know, modifying your pledge or managing late pledges or anything like that. Mm-hmm. BackerKit is one place they go. GameFound is another place. And all of these places are aggressively getting into crowdfunding. So hopefully they also stay away from NFT crap and continue to grow.
I don't know if you've been paying attention. There is not an awful lot of, let's say, financial incentive to get into the NFT market right now.
Yeah, it's man, it's hard not to laugh. I had the thought as I was reading about it that reading all these stories about people who put their life savings into NFTs or were like hardcore crypto bros and just had their lives ruined.
Yeah.
Feels eerily similar to reading all the stories of people who like went balls deep in the QAnon cult.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, probably had their lives.
Because they're the same people.
Yeah.
many of them. Yeah. There's a great,
oh, God.
There's a great, there's a huge, let's say fascist component to the hardcore, crypto scene. Like mm-hmm. Alex Jones, you know, was basically going to go bankrupt. You know, filed fraudulently for bankruptcy, but it was having a lot of financial trouble because of the Sandy Hook lawsuits that he was under, in addition to a bunch of other stuff. And somebody, a mystery donor, the Bitcoin Fairy, gave him $8 million in Bitcoin, untraceable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but just that's the thing that's like weirded me out about blockchain and, you know, crypto from the beginning was the scamminess and instability, but also just the ideology that seemed to back it, the fact that it started as this libertarian kind of, you know, pipe dream kind of deal. Yeah. There's a great podcast you can check out called Scam Economy, run by one of the people from Majority Report. That is a weekly show kind of just like looking at the ways that crypto sucks and documenting the kind of the recent, let's say, icebergs that the ship has hit.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. So laughing all the way to the actual bank.
Yeah.
Watching that go down.
And trust me, it brings me no joy to say anything good about an actual bank. So
yeah, but it also says something that you're making the actual banks look good. You gotta be real bad before that happens.
You were gonna say something, Ben?
Yeah, I think I referenced or recommended this before, but there's a YouTube channel called Line Goes Up that did like a 2.5 hour documentary NFTs specifically.
That was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely recommend that. It's like blockchain isn't like there could be good uses, in the current implementation there's definitely scaling issues and it's the first time I've interacted with what I would call toxic positivity, which I didn't know was a possibility before.
Mm-hmm.
See, I just generally speaking in life, if you just assume everything is as fucked up as it possibly could be, you're probably right.
You can only be pleasantly surprised. Let's see here, David. I wasn't aware they were making a sequel to that mini game from Mario Paint.
I had a story.
Did you now?
Oh yes, I'm sorry.
You just posted it 8 minutes ago.
It has been a very long day.
What the hell?
How many episodes have you had a story and just forgotten when we throw you? You've been doing so much work and not getting the reward.
So, someone made a Instructables where they modified one of those electric fly swatters to detect when you successfully swat a bug and add sound effects and a kill counter.
Yeah. they use an Arduino and a small display and speaker to gamify this. Yeah.
Note that this is intended for mosquitoes, which are one bug that definitely deserves to be killed.
Yes.
Does it say double kill, triple kill?
Holy shit.
There was some suggestion of that in the discussion I saw, but I don't think that's a feature yet, but that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said it's an Instructables kind of deal. Does that mean like a DIY thing? Like the people who would actually put this together probably will add that sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you Beautiful. Can you can choose the sound that it plays too. So that's good. Hmm. Yeah. No, this is this is neat. Funny facts about those, you know, electrified mosquito swatter or bug swatter kind of things. You've seen them like a truck stops or whatever. The plastic tennis racket with the electrified little netting that you can hit. They're sold with the branding to kill bugs. Like, hey, this is a bug thing. Same exact product with different branding, sold as sex toys.
Oh no.
Yeah.
What you're telling me is that if you want to up your kill count artificially, you can just start poking it.
Yeah. I mean, they're
I won't specify what you're poking it with.
You're a dirty little fly. Yeah. So just thought people would want to just be aware that that's an option if they weren't.
Well, that's like violet wands were originally used for testing like neon signs.
I am. What is a violent wand?
Electrostimulation.
Okay. Yeah. Huh.
I'll trust you in definitely not Googling. wait, stop. Incognito mode. Okay, not Google.
Oh yeah. Top electrosex toys. Neat. Yeah. I just wasn't aware of that one. Yep. But yeah. Anyway, that's a good story though. And it didn't seem like anybody else played Mario Paint. Didn't appreciate my little poll there at the beginning.
Yeah. I don't recall that. Is there a fly apocalypse in Mario Paint?
So, it's like a mouse trainer. It's a little mini game where, you use the mouse to control a little fly swatter to swat bugs. It's neat. Look it up on YouTube. Like everything on Mario Paint, the music and sound cues are amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That seems like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this level number 419. Next week is 420.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't speak while high. I have even more trouble finding my words. So I am going to just let that one just be. I'm not going to celebrate.
Guess who's having a panic attack on next week's episode?
Oh man,
is Delta 8 a thing in Ohio?
Delta 8. What is Delta 8?
So basically, they've discovered a way to isolate THC from just industrial quantities of regular hemp.
Okay.
And so it is technically legal.
Huh. That sounds really expensive.
It's not. I am sure there is some dark side to it that, like, I don't know, we're just dumping all of our THC-less hemp on a third world country or something.
Hmm.
But yeah, no, it's not that bad, but like it's literally, at least down here, you can go to like the freaking gas station and buy it.
Yeah. Well, that'll be true for about 4 months, probably.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a moral panic about it. Yeah. No, was not aware. I just know my expectation when you said that was like, oh, it'll be like K2. It'll be like a designer drug.
No, guys, if you rearrange the letters in Delta 8, it spells Satan.
You know, I want to argue with you, but
in Latin,
I don't know how to disprove that. So,
yeah.
Anyway, if you want to support the show and learn about more designer drugs, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can like us on Facebook, participate in the multiplayer. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Leave a rating or review in whatever podcast directory whichever one you get the show from. Most of all, come back next time. Let me see here. And Jala Cham is nothing. That's not a thing, let alone Jala Cham dot place. I'm looking at Jala Chan. Yeah. The most recent episode is about the Batman movie, her podcast with her friends. I think the one upcoming it's either related to Juneteenth or it is the one that is about, let's see here, race, gender, and identity, things like that. I think she's doing a couple for that. The diversity, equity, inclusion, that one has already been done. Follow her in those places, check and see what is coming up on that show. Dennis, is there anything that you want to promote for Deck of Wonders?
Yeah, come see me at Gen Con. If you're going to be there, I will be as well. I don't have a booth number yet, but I will put it out there when I have it, and cool. And would love to see any Duck Feed friendos out there.
Yeah, identify yourselves. Get weird.
and at Gen Con, that takes some doing, right? Like a weirdness that stands out is going to be hard to accomplish. So consider yourself challenged.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
Yeah, I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words. And with Origins, I started trying to get more disciplined about having a social media presence. Nice. So there might actually be something there.
I'm David Mysmith. I guess I'll give my, you know, social media presence discipline to, to Dennis.
Yeah, which is none because you don't have one.
Yep.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
Okay. I actually went through level reviews last week, like on iTunes, just because I'd never done that before.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah, I don't look at those anymore.
Well, okay, but here's what I found. First review ever was by me. And I gave it five stars, and I said, this is the best podcast ever, and I mean that only partially because I'm a co-host on it.
I should report that. Yeah, so conflict of interest.
I think I found the most cool image ever.
Oh yeah, no. But, yeah, there's another one. So you posted one of the boom or one of the King of the Hill, Junji Ito. It's Boomhauer at the Enigma of Amagara Fault. This is my dang old hole. there's another one of Bill. It's an Uzumaki. Bill turning into one of the slugs, or one of the snails, rather. Yeah. let's see here. There's a Dale one as well. It's him crawling over from the other row house. Lord. Yeah, God, that's good. Great. It's good stuff. Yeah, and people have been bringing those to me a lot.
It's almost like you have a type.
Yeah. When somebody posted that in Slack, I was like, oh, hey, the Venn diagram that I am precisely in the middle of. Yep. So I've got two potential titles. I have The Boy Takes. And I have My Quest Against Mud.
Uh-huh. I had My Quest Against Mud as well.
Okay.
I also had Blood Runner, Distance Winch. I now forget the context for this one, but stabbing is just a perk. and then finally, Dirty Little Fly.
Oh, no. I don't like that one bit. Let's see here. David, what you got?
So I just had, if you rearrange Delta A, it spells Satan.
it'll take me a while to type that. Oh, man. It's Satan. Okay. And Ben, what you got?
I also had two. I had also had The Boy Takes. And then this one was a joke I made in my head, but didn't say out loud, but it was Russian to get it. Because Dennis said rushing to get it, but it was took place in Russia. So I thought that was funny.
That's pretty good.
Rushing to get it. Okay, so by the votes, it's The Boy Takes or My Quest Against Mud. However, the one that got the most laughs was Stabbing is Just a Perk.
I want to know the context of that one. I'm also interested in that one.
Yeah.
You get it when we listen to the episode, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any opposition to Stabbing as Just a Perk?
Nope.
Only in real life.
Well, yeah. Don't work for that company.
Fair enough.
All right. It is decided.